Blog Talk Radio.
This is Satchinananda from the Love Channel. I want to welcome you here tonight to spend a moment in time with me as I recollect my heart. It's been really a very interesting week, and it's always interesting for me, but to really be in the state of wonder and to be in the state of acceptance and to watch reality and see how things manifest. It's really interesting, and it's been so clear, a representative of what I've come to realize in the last 21 years, I guess, in consciousness, that everything that I am is made known in my reality. Everything I assume I am is. Anyone who knows and has been following the show for as long as it's been on, a couple of years now, and on and off, on and off, knows that my path is A Course in Miracles. It's an awakening that I had in 1994, opened up the book for me in my heart, and I started living the path. And it was really a beautiful, it's been a beautiful representative of everything that I came to realize. And also anyone that knows me knows that I've been completely alienated from the world, so to speak, that most people live in, because I haven't really done television for a lot of years, and I haven't allowed myself to be part of the media, you know. So anyway, and I also have devoted my life to helping people become self-realized. And so the last 7 months, I've been in a new reality where I've been running a restaurant that I have come to feel is almost like a house, a home, a center for me. And just recently I decided to do my spiritual center there with Course in Miracles classes and meditation classes. And this Sunday was the first meditation class. It was absolutely beautiful. I was able to allow the vessel I am to open up completely to channeling a beautiful concept. Much love to the experience. Everybody that was there really felt it. And there was a lot of remembrance in the room and a lot of healing. And again, healing is a silly notion because really there's no illness. It's just a mindset. Anyway, with that in mind, the fact that I've kind of reestablished myself in the center of A Course in Miracles again, which I've done many times in consciousness and over the years, people on my Facebook had asked me to, if I would be kind enough to record the class, and I didn't do it because it was very, last night especially, it was very, very intimate, and it was very, very impulsive. I just let it flow like I usually do with no anticipation of what I might do, what I could do. I just let it flow. And we opened to the section that was called How is Healing Accomplished? And that is something that I've always used in my classes over the years, because I really feel that that section is the Course in Miracles. That section is the truth that I've come to realize. And now science, as I always say, is in epigenetics, is basically validating for me and for those that have been in my world the truth that I've, you know, validating what I've been doing as being the truth. Even science is saying it now. And the new book by Joseph Dispenza that I talked about last week, which is You Are the Placebo, which is absolutely divine. It's a beautiful concept of what I've, even some of the terminology I feel is what I've been using over the years. And then in the book in the middle, I bought the Kindle version, but in the actual textbook, it does show you pictures of, you know, the results of tests and everything, people that had Parkinson's disease and how the cells actually change to a healthy cell, and just so much that the logical mind requires almost to substantiate a truth. And so for me, I really feel like it's a celebration. Anyway, so with that whole idea of being asked to record what I do so that people that weren't privy to the class could hear it, I just thought it would be good for me to, or be cool for me to just kind of go into it again and allow the Holy Spirit, which I call really the wiser voice or the Holy One within, to bring forth that which is maybe more understandable than I maybe would do if I was trying to explain it myself. So I just try to be an empty vessel for that voice to come through me. And so what I want to do is start reading sections from this, How Was Healing Accomplished? And that's the Teacher's Manual of A Course in Miracles. And I think it is. I'm sure it is. Let me just see. Make sure that I'm, to me it's all the same. Yeah, the Teacher's Manual, How Was Healing Accomplished? So I'm going to start with that. And any callers that want to ask any questions on this, please feel free. If you're in the chat room, the same thing. And in the archive, a lot of people do my show through the archive. Feel free to write me either on my Facebook or anandraoflove@aol.com with any questions or comments you might have. So I'm going to start. How is healing accomplished? And it says here, healing involves an understanding of what the illusion of sickness is for. Healing is impossible without this. As I'm reading, if I feel guidance to stop, I'll stop and kind of allow the Holy bring forth a clearer or more concise concept of what's being read here. The perceived purpose of sickness. Healing is accomplished the instant the sufferer no longer sees any value in pain. Who would choose suffering unless he thought it brought him something and something of value to him? He must think it is a small price to pay for something of greater worth. For sickness is an election, a decision. It is the choice of weakness and the mistaken conviction that it is strength. When this occurs, real strength is seen as threat and health is danger. And this is really a great place for me to stop and, you know, feel guided. There's been a man in my life, not in my life, but he's a man that I see a lot, and I did see a lot, not much lately, but in Barnes & Noble, and that's kind of my group hangout. You know, there's just always somebody there to talk to or hang out with, and we kind of all, parts of us, just sit there and talk and whatever. And he's been sick, and he's like the bearer of doom, and he's, you know, whatever. So tonight, right after work, I sometimes go there just for a little breather, just have a cup of tea or whatever. And I had shown the book to a friend of mine, a girl that I know, and I said, you know, here's a placebo effect. You want to look through it? And as soon as I did that, there started to be almost a resentment in this man's voice, and he started talking about some local restaurant and how they were raising their prices and really being annoyed that I was talking about healing. And so this is what's happening here when it says it's the choice of weakness and the mistaken conviction that it is strength. When this occurs, real strength is seen as a threat and health is a danger. So the idea that someone could be responsible to their own health is horrifying because they really then think that they brought the disease upon themselves. And that's a really hard pill, no pun intended, but to accept the fact that we are the maker of all we see, including the idea that there can be disease in our body. So that when this occurs, real strength is seen as a threat and health is danger. Sickness is a method conceived in madness for placing God's Son on his Father's throne. And for me, I got such a strong imagery of that. And I always, you know, I almost like sometimes when I'm teaching, I see things as a parody and I really find it humorous. And I see that, you know, in this moment we actually say, it's like we're drowning and we're being thrown a lifesaver and we're denying it. We're saying, no, I don't want that. I can handle this. Knowing that, in fact, you're kind of just drowning yourself, you know, in that moment. And this is what happens. We actually say to the heavenly aspect of us, no, I can handle this. It's not about you fixing or saving or bringing me back to wonder, bringing me back to the true sense of my godhood, but I will handle this. And you actually take the throne and think that you're going to be, you know, your own healer, your own whatever. So it says, God is seen as outside, fierce and powerful, eager to keep all power for himself. Only by his death can he be conquered by his son? And that, and what in that insane conviction does healing stand for? It symbolizes the defeat of God's son and the triumph of his father over him. It represents the ultimate defiance in a direct form which the Son of God is forced to recognize. It stands for all that he would hide from himself to protect his life. If he is healed, he is responsible for his thoughts. And if he is responsible for his thoughts, he will be killed to prove to him how weak and pitiful he is. But if he chooses death himself, his weakness is his strength. Now has he given himself what God would give to him and thus entirely usurped the throne of his creator. And so this is, you know, Ananda, I have a disease. You don't understand. This kind of lung disease does not heal. Ananda, you don't understand. He's sick. You have no heart. Don't you understand? He's suffering. The shift in perception. Healing must occur in exact proportion to which the valuelessness of sickness is recognized. One need but say, there is no gain at all to me in this, and he is healed. But to say this, one first must recognize certain facts. First, it is obvious that decisions are of the mind, not of the body. If sickness is but a faulty problem-solving approach, it is a decision. And if it is a decision, it is in the mind and to the body that makes it. The resistance to recognize this is enormous because the existence of the world as you perceive it depends on the body being the decision maker. Think about that. Just for a moment, allow yourself to think how often we are guided by the physical bodies. Response to something when in fact the body does nothing on its own. The body does exactly what we or the environment we choose to project outward tells us to do with it. So when we really understand that the body is not the decision maker, terms like instincts, reflexes, and the like represents attempts to endow the body with non-mental motivators. Actually, such terms merely state or describe the problem. They do not answer it. But my leg is hurting me. Oh, I got these chills. I don't know what it is. I don't know. I have a gut feeling. It's all representative of the mind projecting on the body, causing the body to react in such a way. It's not the other way around. The acceptance of sickness as a decision of the mind for a purpose for which it would use the body is the basis of healing. And this is so for healing in all forms. A patient decides that this is so, and he recovers. And this is all happening in these new epigenetic workshops all over that Bruce Lipton and Dr. Joe Dispenza is doing and so many others that are revealing to people the power they are in their own world. As soon as they decide to recover, the cells start recovering. And the cells being the physical body or the body of work that they have made known in their reality. So the cells, and whether it be the physical cells of dis-ease that go back to wellness or health, or the financial situation, or the neighborhood, or the weather conditions, or whatever, the cells start to recover. If he decides against recovery, he will not be healed. Who is the physician? Only the mind of the patient himself. That is so profoundly beautiful. Who is the physician? Only the mind of the patient himself. If we could grasp this and accept this, there could be then no victim. There could only be aspects of the self that are either lost or found. When one really grasps this, because there can't be freedom in a mind that thinks it's a victim to circumstances, whatever those circumstances might be. We can call it body, we can call it world, we can call it relationships. How I relate to me, how I think about me, determines how I feel, and every relationship will match that. Only the mind of the patient himself is the physician. The outcome is what he decides that it is. But Ananda, you don't understand. He doesn't get it. He's not like you. You have to be gentle with him. He's in pain. Don't you understand? Only see pain if I am pain. I can only see that which I feel about me out pictured. So the part of me that's telling me that someone's in pain is projecting their pain on that someone, which is just a formation of thought realized. Special agents seem to be ministering to him, yet they but give form to his own choice. He chooses them in order to bring tangible form to his desires. But you don't understand, he said. That aspect, that agent, that performer, that actor then brings tangible form to what I desire to see in my perceptual reality. Course in Miracles says you only see what you ask to see. And it's not conscious, but when we become conscious, how can we deny what we've already seen as not being ours when we know we are it? And it is this they do and nothing else. They are not actually needed at all. And whether we call it patient or doctor, sickness or wellness, it doesn't matter. They're not needed at all. The patient could merely rise up without their aid and say, I have no use for this. There is no form of sickness that would not be cured at once. In the book, The Placebo Effect, they actually talk about the healing occurring before the person goes to a doctor. Already the decision has been made to heal the body, and that medicine he gets is a placebo because that medicine is just doing what the mind tells it to do. And if it doesn't work, it's because the mind said, I want to heal, but I don't want to heal. I want to go back to truth or I want to stay in the lie. There is no form of sickness that would not be cured at once, once the patient says, I have no use for this. It serves me not. What is the single requisite for this shift in perception? It is simply this, the recognition that sickness is of the mind and has nothing to do with the body. What does this recognition cost? It costs the whole world you see, for the world will never again appear to rule the mind. For with this, recognition is responsibility placed where it belongs, not with the world, but on him who looks on the world and sees it as it is not. He looks on what he chooses to see, no more and no less. It's really interesting because my son and I especially, you know, we're both very, very opinionated. And we were raised in the same lineage. He's a part of me. I'm a part of my world. He's a part of my mom, my dad, and his grandparents, and the dad and his dad. And so we're very, very opinionated. And it's often projected outward different realities. And he says, but you're not seeing it clear. And I say, well, I'm seeing it the way I see it. And he said, but that's not the way it is. And I say, from your perceptual reality, it's not the way it is. But in mine, that's the way it is. Because it's never the same. As much as it may seem like there's a simpatico between two observers, they're still seeing from a different perspective. And so they'll never, ever see identical. No more and no less will he see but what he chooses to see. The world does nothing to him. He only thought it did. Nor does he do anything to the world because he was mistaken about what it is. Herein is the release from guilt and sickness both, for they are one. Yet to accept this release, the insignificance of the body must be an acceptable idea. Last night, before class, a man that's always been on my Facebook, friendly guy, always wrote me a little hello, Ananda. I think he's Indian because his language is a little different than mine. His name sounds like it is, and consciousness, I don't know, whatever. It's his aspect of me that I brought forth on some level, and he's always been very nice. Haven't heard from him in a while. He just wrote me and said, Ananda, I'm very sick. I have a bone disease, and it's cost me all my money, all my, you know, relationships, all my everything, and the doctors don't know if I'm going to make it. And I offered him the idea that he could heal his body. But I'm so weak, you don't understand. I said, I do understand. If you were not weak, then you would not be sick, because the belief that you could be sick is weakness in itself. So I suggested that he started watching videos by anyone that I know that is a belief in epigenetics or the Course in Miracles, which is that, you know, we see what we ask to see, or we make our world what we think we are. And he was receptive to that. So I just thought I'd bring that in too, because as I become clearer and clearer, aspects of the self that were connected to the victim or the, you know, cause and effect, and that I do this so that happens, and I got a draft, and I got sick, or I caught that, and, you know, after all, you get sick when you're in company of others that are sick, and whatever. So they come up, and they're coming up all around me in different ways, mentally, emotionally, and then also the physical aspects. I'm clear, though. I'm aware that that's what's going on. So he says he looks on what he chooses to see, no more, no less. The world is nothing to him. He only thought it did, nor does he do anything to the world because he was mistaken about what it is. Herein is the release from guilt and sickness both, for they are one, which I thought was really profound. First time in a while, I've read this book over and over, did I really see that the guilt and sickness are both one. Yet to accept this release, the insignificance of the body must be an acceptable idea. And for me, it was a really big test when I decided a while ago, I guess now it's about a year and a half ago, to tattoo my chest with a very, very important statement of fact. And it was for me to kind of substantiate my love for me and another, and also to be faithful to that. And I knew that if I did that on some level, that I couldn't betray body, mind, or spirit, this aspect of me called a sacred union. It was a whole, a big, big force of love that I brought through me. And after I did it, it was like, oh, my God, you know, I really branded myself with something that I never dreamed I would do in my body, and it's beautiful, and my cleavage, and my chest, and oh, my God, I want it off, and all I kept thinking was, oh, my God, I don't like this, and not what it represented, but the fact that I couldn't take it off. And then I had a miracle or a change perception. Of Course in Miracles calls it a miracle occurred. And I saw it for what it was. I saw that it was to show me that the body is insignificant. I had to realize insignificance of the body must be an acceptable idea. And that's where I just left off, and that's why I brought that up. And with that came so much peace, because the body I wear is nothing more than a mindset, a mental construct that I brought into being. In any moment, I can choose again. I can shift even the physical manifestation of body type if I choose to. And this is what this is all about. This is what I've come to realize when I had that wonderful, mind-boggling Kundalini experience in 1994, when I realized in time that I was really the maker of all that I was seeing in my world. So beautiful, such a beautiful awareness to know that you are responsible for anything. And a lot of aspects of the one feel that if they had that responsibility, that they could not handle it, when in fact they have it anyway. But unfortunately, because they don't own it, they fall prey to the other side of it, the gloom and the doom and the death and the sickness and the poverty and the broken relationships, because they do not understand that they are in fact making their world anyway. They are the deciders. Without their attention, they would have nothing. It would be a void. There would be absolutely no reality. With this idea, is pain forever gone? With this idea goes also all confusion about creation. Does not this follow of necessity place cause and effect in their true sequence in one respect, and the learning will generalize and transform the world? The transfer value of one true idea has no end or limit. The final outcome of this lesson is the remembrance of God. What do guilt and sickness and pain and disaster and all suffering mean now, having no purpose? They are gone. And with them also go all the effects they seem to cause. Cause and effect, but replicate creation, seen in their proper perspective, without distortion and without fear, they reestablish heaven. They reestablish heaven. The function of the teacher of God. If the patient must change his mind in order to be healed, what does the teacher of God do? Can he change the patient's mind for him? Certainly not. For those already willing to change their mind, he has no function except to rejoice with them, for they have become teachers of God with him. He has, however, a more specific function for those who do not understand what healing is. These patients do not realize they have chosen sickness. On the contrary, they believe that sickness has chosen them. Oh, poor, 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 poor lady. Look at that. She's fall prey to disease. That poor lady. She fall prey to a mindset that believed that she found her answer to being noticed, to being cared for, to being whatever, by choosing to have sickness as a reality. Are these they open-minded on this point? The body tells them what to do and they obey. They have no idea how insane this concept is. If they even suspected it, they would be healed. Yet they suspect nothing. To them, the separation is quite real. To them, God's teachers come to represent another choice which they had forgotten. The simple presence of a teacher of God is a reminder. His thoughts ask for the right to question what the patient has accepted is true. Byron Katie, she always, in her work, the work, she says, is that true? Is it true? There is no truth in a world of illusion. There's nothing that's concrete. If there's nothing that's concrete in a world of illusion, then anything can be changed. As God's messengers, his teachers are the symbols of salvation. They ask the patient for forgiveness for God's Son in his own name. They stand for the alternative. With God's word in their minds, they come in benediction, not to heal the sick, but to remind them of the remedy God has already given them. It is not their hands that heal. It is not their voice that speaks the word of God. They merely give what he has given them. Very gently they call to their brothers to turn away from death. Behold, you Son of God, what life can offer you. Would you choose sickness in place of this? Not once did the advanced teachers of God consider the forms of sickness in which their brother believes. To do this is to forget that all of them have the same purpose and therefore are not really different. They seek for God's voice in their brothers who would so deceive himself as to believe God's Son can suffer. Think about that for just a moment. Any time that you enable disease in your world, you are keeping it alive. Any time you feel pain for someone else's suffering, you are keeping it alive. It's a vicious cycle, and it does not end until someone says, this is not real. The truth is their mind reaches out to the truth in the minds of their brothers so that illusions are not reinforced. They are thus brought to truth. Truth is not brought to them. So are they dispelled not by the will of another, but by the union of the one will within itself. And this is the function of God's teachers, to see no will as separate from their own, nor theirs as separate from God. And this is very, very powerful. In my evolution in consciousness, it's been so apparent that so many aspects of me have been alarmed by my presence, have been uncomfortable about my presence, have been insulted by me saying, you're one with God, you're healed, you're whole. There's been so many aspects of me that choose sickness over health, fear over love, in the name of God, in the name of love. So I hope this night, because last night in my experience with the Holy One coming through me and sharing with those aspects of me that were so not in resistance, they were so accepting of what was coming through that they are in fact the makers of all they see. And tonight, those that listen, those that are in the chat, those that will archive this show and hear this, let there be a remembrance, let there be a trigger within the one to remember that they are truly one with their infinite field of potential. And with that in mind, choose again. Choose a body that is health. Choose a relationship that is loved. Choose a financial situation that you are cared for in as. Because in truth, we are all one with the infinite field of potential. We are one holy force that does, unbeknownst to us for the most part, make our world what it is, starting with the physical body that we wear and rippling out to every aspect of the self. There is someone holding. I'm going to open it. There's a few, but I'm going to open up the first one. They've been waiting for a little bit. Hello, who's calling?
Hello. My name's Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi. So are you doing, like, readings tonight?
Well, what was happening here, if you heard the show so far, I've been talking about the aspect of the one within us that does really heal us, that there really is nothing outside of us to fix, but the mind that's perceiving the illness or the relationship that's not working or whatever, or whatever. Is there anything in mind that you want to talk about?
Oh, yeah, that's a good topic. Yeah, I was just wondering about my finances.
Okay, so the show was about the body being really a puppet. The body that we wear, the finances that we think that we have to earn, the relationships that we think that we are in are all made by us. So when we really realize that we're one with the infinite field of potential, and that really that our own feeling tone, what we feel about ourselves, will dictate, in fact, what we will see, and whether that be a beautiful body or a beautiful relationship or lots of money or whatever, it's from within. So how do you feel about yourself?
Well, I struggle with that. You know, I struggle with myself.
Well, again, that's beautiful because you're aware of it. So why do you think you struggle with yourself?
I think it's because I experienced a lot of abuse in my life.
Okay. So right now we can change that. As I was saying earlier, that what you see in your world is what you ask to see unconsciously most of the time, unbeknownst to us, because those patterns, like you say, that abuse become our teachers. They become our guides. They really bring us into hell because they're not true. They're all, you know, self-taught. They're things we're taught, and we assume them as if they're real. But in fact, we are making our world 24/7. Whatever we feel is happening and showing up in our reality. So if we wanted to change that now, what would those thoughts look like? What would that feeling feel like for you?
Well, I've been doing a lot of meditation, and it really has helped me realize, you know, a lot of this stuff. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, it does make sense, honey. But now what would it feel like if you were to walk now right into the perfect environment? What do you think you'd have to be feeling right now and thinking right now?
I don't know. I'm not trying to be difficult. I don't know.
That's something that's wrong. So when you ask me, what do my finances look like? I'm going to tell you, I don't know.
Okay.
Because you don't know. Once you know, you have no doubt. So I would suggest to you that you start focusing on you being valued by you. You being so valued by you that you can't be without. You can't be without all that's right for you.
Yeah, that's what I have been focusing on.
Then that's awesome. So when I ask you again, how would it feel, thoughts would you have right now for you to walk into the perfect environment for you? What does it look like? What does it feel like? Can you tell me?
Like a comfortable. It would be comfortable.
It'd be comfortable. And what thoughts do you think you'd have?
I don't know.
Okay, so now you're going to ask me again, what did your finances look like, honey? And I got to tell you, I don't know.
Okay.
Because as long as you don't know.
So do you ever read the future, like when you do psychic readings, or you do just more like New Age thought?
My life is about really seeing everything. It's transparent to me, but it's a perceptual reality. So what I can see for you is only what I can see for me. I see unbelievable riches in my life always, but that's my perceptual reality. Now you're talking to me from your perceptual reality, and you're telling me you don't know what thoughts you'd have if you were happy. So I'm going to tell you again that whatever I tell you is exactly my psychic ability right now, because you told me that you don't know what it would look like or feel like or what thoughts you would have. So I'm going to tell you you can go to any. But honey, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, usually like when I've called different shows and things, like they can predict different things, you know, in my life. Like they'll see something like, you know, different things. So that's not the way you work. You work more like changing your thoughts. That's the way you work.
My life is about knowing that I'm the creator of my reality, but then so are you. Everybody in our world, everyone in perceptual reality is the maker of what they say. What you feel about yourself is the relationship you'll have with everyone, how you relate to you. So every psychic and all these people that you're talking about, they're just talking about themselves. They're seeing a projected future that's a possibility in their realm, in your realm, It may never occur. So I don't play with people like that. I'm telling you that what I feel from you right now is that you're unsure about yourself. So mm-hmm. Your insecurity about yourself is going to keep you insecure. So my encouragement for you tonight is to choose again. And don't allow yourself to be brought where you don't want to be anymore.
Okay.
Well, I mean that, and I mean that set boundaries for you in your perceptual world, starting with the way you think and the way you feel. And if your thoughts want to take you where you don't belong, choose again. Keep choosing again, realizing that when you change that thought and those thoughts and that process of thinking, you'll change your life. And when you change those thoughts, I will promise you that your feelings for you will change. But you got to be vigilant. You got to stay clear. You can't keep letting him in. You can't keep letting those aspects of you in that don't belong with you.
Yeah, I agree. I know what you're talking about. Yeah,
all
definitely.
Right.
The more I meditate, the more I see that, you know, aspect.
So that's it, honey. And so when you get that, then there's an infinite field of possibilities that you can tap into. But you can't go there until you realize that you are, in fact, the maker and you are responsible to everything that shows up, even if it's negative. Because the more that you allow negative thought and person and people and things in, the more that they'll take over your being.
Okay.
So you got to be your own protector. You got to be your own God. You got to be your own teacher, because only you can move past what you're in right now.
Okay, well, thank you for the reading.
You're welcome. And keep meditating, baby. It really does help.
It really helps. Okay, bye-bye. Thank you.
Have a good night, baby. Okay, so it goes back to, again, you know, unless we understand that there's no doctor, there's no psychic, there's no, you know, financial institution, there's no relationship, there's no man, there's no woman, there's no anything out there but what we have there be. You know, we are just mirror images of what we feel about ourselves and think about ourselves. You know, we all want the quick fix. Somebody fix me. Somebody help me. Somebody love me. When in fact, we are doing it to ourselves. It's like we're in a house of mirrors, constantly assuming that there's other body shapes, other figures, other reasons, other, you know, music, other whatever, and when in fact what we're seeing is aspects of ourselves. Aspects of ourselves showing us exactly what we're asking them to show us. It's a scrim. It's not even real. Until we understand that there is only one source, and that's within, and that's when the happy dream, of Course in Miracles calls it a happy dream, occurs, and everything flows. We cannot want for anything. And you dance, and everybody's dancing divinely with you. Now, it doesn't happen until we really understand that it is us that's making everything be the way we'd have it be. And it's not a conscious choice until it is. We can't change anything until we realize we can. Change is magnificent in the perceptual world. Good, bad, or indifferent, because when change occurs, that means that we chose again, whether we did it consciously or not. And the idea with what I've been doing in my own perceptual world and then, you know, sharing out loud with me, to me, at me, is that one need realize the power they have to change reality. You know, the shapeshift, to move in and out of body types that don't suit you, to move in and out of relationships that are not congruent with the one. You know? Once you realize the physical movement of being is just an idea, you know, we will wait for the perfect mate to have the perfect love and the perfect sex and the perfect everything, when in fact all of that is occurring in the mind of the perceiver. once you grasp that and you realize that your heart is forever loved, there can't be then any insecurity ever again. You walk into every scenario knowing you're the master of your universe. You know? And this is a hard pill to swallow. I am offering those aspects of me that are in wonderment right now on the show the opportunity to be the richest, magnificent, healthiest, most beautiful aspects that they'd ever dreamed that they could be. And for the most part, people say, I can't accept what she says. She's weird, she's wacky, she's whatever. And they hang up. The girl that I couldn't give the psychic reading to, she had enough. She wanted to know if he was going to stay with her or leave her. And she didn't know. She didn't know. She didn't know how she feels. She doesn't know anything. Because we were taught that we're nothing. That we have no power. When in fact we have all the power in every moment, whether we use it for our pain, whether we use it for our joy, whether we use it for abundance, whether we use it for our poverty, it's happening anyway. It's always happening. Everything that we see, we've asked to see. Of Course in Miracles says, choose again, choose again, choose again, choose again. And last week's class, we opened to a lesson, and it was God's will be done. People that came to the class, an aspect of me, because I don't see anyone as separate, said to me, Ananda, it was a saving grace for me this week, because any time a negative thought, an idea, a feeling came in through me, I did God's will be done. God's will be done. And it was magnificent to see me just accepting that, you know. And it's true, you know, whatever tools, I always say this in the class, the aspect of love in your mind that you've experienced that best represents love, complete, let that be your focal point when you're having times of discouragement or feelings of disharmony or dis-ease, is to go back to the remembrance of being embraced by that love or, you know, being licked by that little tiny puppy that you had when you were a child. Whatever feeling that you had in remembrance that brings you back to joy and peace and love, go there. Use that. Use it as a way shower or a way to reestablish within you the remembrance that you are one with love, with God. I really feel that there's such great change occurring in my perceptual world that so many of the ones are awakening to the remembrance that they are one. They are the makers of their world. You know, we're not at the stage to be like little children to enter the kingdom of heaven. I have not reached that level yet. I've had glimpses of it in time, but I'm not really that clear slate yet where I can just be and know that I am one with God. So sometimes I have to go to the place within me where I'm being embraced by the love that I've come to realize as the one. And those moments bring me back to the state of remembrance and that I know that I'm being cared for by the higher aspect of me that is watching out for me, my protector, knowing that I am lost sometimes, that I'm afraid sometimes, that I'm weak sometimes. And knowing that he will, it will, she will, universal love will bring me back to where it is. That's right, to kind of be still and remember that I am one with God, with love. And so before we go tonight, I want to just allow myself to just reflect on the love that I know that I am, and to offer that to all that might be discouraged tonight or disoriented, to remember that within you resides the key to the kingdom of heaven. Be vigilant for God and his kingdom now. Watch those thoughts. Be the gatekeeper. The thoughts that bring you into worry, into misery, into insecurity, into doubt, into fear. Slay them. They don't belong to you. Go back to love. Choose again. Go back to love. We are entering an amazing experience that's infinite if we allow ourselves to just be, knowing that we are the maker, and keep our thoughts on God alone, on love alone. And every moment we'll see the effects of that. If something does come into play that isn't congruent with that, choose again. If the environment you're in is bringing you great pain, choose again. Choose again, choose again, choose again, choose again, until all of a sudden you realize that you have the power to choose again. That you have the power to change any malady, any circumstance, by just allowing yourself to recognize that you are one with God. I'm going to say goodnight. Thank you for being here in me, through me, at me, experiencing heaven while here on earth. Good night, all.